because I think one's funny if one's a good writer. One's not funny because life is funny. One's funny because life isn't. It's precisely because life is not funny that one needs to be funny. It's precisely because life ends in death. It's precisely because there is nothing waiting for us after this that we are funny. You can't be a believer in the afterlife and also be funny.
Hi, I'd like to introduce
Kaput Radio, your companion to the idiot era.
My name is Martin, and that should be all you need to know at this point.
Kaput Radio, when life seems too simple to be true.
So, I got the laptop out once more while trying to remember what all happened since last time and why many issues are going to fall by the wayside today.
Tonight.
Yes, he was dictatorial.
What we now is leadership.
I appreciate they might think it's party time.
While Australian politics wallow in the wet mud, splashing around.
My question of the House will come to order. Order. The Leader of the Opposition will resume his seat.
Last night the chamber descended into farce.
The policies are truly stalled and buried under considerations for elections to come in about 2 years from now.
It's time to head to the polls, Australia. These modern times call for a modern leader, and they don't come much more modern than Tony Abbott. He's a confident leader.
I do feel daunted.
As a Catholic, I can't be trusted to make an objective decision.
He's ready to make changes.
We can't stop people drinking. We can't stop people gambling.
Nothing whatsoever will ever be done by any coalition government.
He's well read.
Do you have a book called Battle Lines?
Has a fresh outlook.
Had a lot of views the same as me.
He's loyal to the mother country.
Supporting the monarchy is as natural as respecting your parents.
He's got modern views on women.
I think it is a tragedy that we have as many women as we do.
That every time the housewife switches on the iron, they're going to feel the heat quite literally.
And the gay problem.
Oh, I probably feel a bit threatened.
He'll keep the Asiatic hordes at bay.
This is about stopping the boats. Stop the boats we must. Stop the boats, we will.
Let Tony Abbott stand up for you, Australia.
I also feel proud and exhilarated at the prospect of leading this great political party into a legacy of unutterable shame.
However, beyond the insignificant confines of our incestuous political scene, a few issues stuck with me. Let's talk about social media for a moment, like Facebook and Twitter. You know how it all really started? A few million years ago, the primates began to proliferate and formed groups. In their evolution, they had to figure out how to get on with each other without constant rape, infanticide, and other endless self-destructive ways. So it all started a bit like this.
Hello, cousin. Could you be so kind and scratch this itchy spot at the center of my back? Oh, yeah, there. Oh, that's good.
Now, that was a typical start of socializing with each other. These first real needs were gradually replaced with perceived irritations, like phantom irritations, such as figuring out one's social status, the pecking order, who is in, who is out at the time, what and how to eat, which pop concert, TV show, what fashion, which computer, smartphone, preferred airline, and so forth. In due course, the grooming began to develop placebo nits, fleas and other parasites, while at the same time the visible activity being retained as disguise. It all evolved even further into disguised activities such as lying, pretending, ignoring and stealing, especially other people's women and money. All designed to establish a socially acceptable level of getting on with each other. These mutual grooming practices were completely lost by modern humans. Until recently, social media only allowed digital back scratching. But now, with the birth of local grooming services, humans can relearn the forgotten skills. typical visit could be started with an opener like,
"Hello, neighbor. How about I finger through your fur and crack your fleas? And you could perhaps take care of my headlights later."
Being answered with,
"I tell you what, I'll crack your fleas, and you'll just put your hand on my loneliness spot for a minute or two."
With local grooming places, life will become a lot more enjoyable. A thorough delicing, flea removal, and general grooming through each other's fur and emotional hiccup zones can work wonders for the well-being of whole communities. So, next time you tweet, check out fleas, lice, and other parasites first before giving away privacy details. And, while at it, put a gorilla face on Facebook. Everyone will understand. There's never enough music on the show.
See, on a related topic, there was actually a genuinely significant scientific breakthrough this week, which got, in my opinion, rather less coverage than it deserved. I don't know, maybe the news media thought it was far too complex for the general public to worry their pretty little heads about. Well, I have more faith in my audience than that, ladies and gentlemen, so I'm going to try and break it down for you now. I can just screw my Professor Brian Cox head on. That's better. Here we go. Quantum mechanics, a fascinating field, subatomic interactions that may not be revealed through science as we commonly understand it. It operates to a different standard. Take light, it's a wave and a particle, but just how much of each is kind of article, since the part we call a particle may not be the genuine article. See, according to the principles of Heisenberg, observing light particles doesn't work, since the act of observing makes them swerve and changes their nature. It's bound to frustrate you. It can fry your brain, it can blow your mind, but I'll try to explain. Get with the beat of the place where physics and philosophy meet. Universe shrinking calls for a whole new level of thinking. Things that may be and may not be as well simultaneously. See, a team at the University of Toronto had an idea, and by heck, they're onto something. They called it weak measurement. They studied the momentum of photons that went through a sliver of calcite and made observations, not of the photons, but their deviations. Eureka! Another piece falls into place of the unsolved disco of time and space. This whole trajectory is along which light waves whiz, is light a particle?
Yes, it is!
A victory for visionary physicists. Nice one, lads, now go out and get pissed. You're looking astounded, but it's easy once you've gotten your head around it.
Quantum mechanics.
Intellectual giants forging ahead with a new kind of science.
Quantum mechanics.
Getting on down with subatomic particles bouncing around.
Quantum mechanics.
It's awesomely groovy and has nothing to do with that James Bond movie, which was frankly quite disappointing, and I don't even know why they called it that, except, well, that was the title of an original short story, but it had nothing to do with the short story, so I don't really know why they bothered, actually.
And now, the Clash of the Titans. Not your Greek tragic comic reign of deities and semi-deities of three sexes. No, it's the Clash of the Cosmology Titans. Watch when Cambridge Professor Stephen Hawkins, the wisdom of the wheel chair, battles with Oxford Professor Brian Cox, the Justin Bieber of cosmology. Don't miss the docu-soap coming soon. Follow the lengthy, abstract spiel of a computer-generated voice unfolding the ultimate Cambridge universe, creating mysticism about time and space, especially at the beginning, finding magically thousands of light years for light to spread out into the space in the first 10 minutes of its existence. Truly an ambiguous but emotionally deeply moving contradiction, yet no sexy aliens can be theorized about in Professor Hawking's universe. Yet Hawking has adversaries, like Professor Cox, smiling like the Bieber and laying out the Oxford style with dimensions, timelessness, your future sexy partner already waiting somewhere in another parallel universe, and if coming across a theoretical problem of the common man not being able to accept his smooth raves, he smiles again, pretends to be very shy, but diverts your attention to strings and vibrations and starts about talking about relativity of being rich and famous while being a complete average guy like Bieber, and the lookalikeness helping him to convince the BBC to spend a whopping sum of money so he can fly to any wild location, showing the Bieberness combined with some peculiar things about physics and parallel parking. Will the Clash of the Titans resolve ultimate questions such as, how long a piece of string really can be, or how wide is widescreen, how tall is a midget, and will we ever find the Yeti ceremonial burial grounds, or whether reincarnation is only possible with Professor Cox's bubbles of parallel universes, but fails in a Hawking's universe. In fact, it is almost certain that a Hawking's universe can ultimately produce only atheists. However, with Teflon-like elegance, Professor Cox invites any religious conviction in on the Cox universe. Can we solve other paradoxes and puzzles of the world, like Murphy's Law regarding falling peanut butter sandwiches? So don't miss the Clash of the Titans, stringing up big bangs with ever-inflating claims of fame.
Never enough music, never enough music, yeah.
What's it called? Baudelaire wrote an essay on comedy that's very, very, very interesting, in which he imagines when comedy was born. And he imagines comedy being born in the Garden of Eden. Comedy is what happens when God realizes that the human beings are not going to be perfect and he kicks them out. That's the moment of, the Bible says that's the moment of sorrow and suffering. And Rabelais says that for the artist, not Rabelais.
Baudelaire,
thank you. Baudelaire said that for the artist, that's the moment when comedy is born because it's born of imperfection. Had Adam and Eve got on perfectly well, had they lived forever in the garden and there'd been no snake, where's the joke? What would we have laughed about? So it's in it's in the acknowledgement of our imperfection and of our mortality, because it's in the Garden of Eden that mortality happens. God's plan was that they would live forever. Doing what? Gardening? What? Comedy comes out of imperfection, but that imperfection is also our life. It's not. It wouldn't have been life to have lived in the Garden of Eden forever, loving each other and doing nothing else but staring at plants, the names of which they couldn't have known because they weren't allowed to eat from the tree of knowledge. It's an intolerable life. So everything that we love about life is bound up with the fact of the shortness of life and death, and that's where comedy finds its domain.
Tony Abbott, thanks for your time tonight.
This is a case of a Nazi prototype of a nuclear power toothbrush, a case of delayed puberty and premature midlife crisis. Only Kaput Radio overtly, deliberately and unashamedly fakes all program content. Well, of course one could get mad over the TV. But alas, there is relief. Doom is coming.
But a lot of people are looking ahead to the apocalypse. According to the Mayan calendar, they say December of next year.
December 21st, 2012. The end of the world is coming. At a place in Bocarage, in southwest France. This is going to be the place that will save you the apocalypse. The sacred mountain, okay. Le Pic de Bocarac. And it's believed that in this mountain, there are actually aliens, some believe, that are going to save you.
Okay, aliens are in the mountain, right?
It's a scientific anomaly. Some residents actually report that they're people who've been walking up the mountain, some in white robes, some naked with orbs. But the concern here, TJ, is sects. Warning people about sects. There's a concern, like we saw with Waco, what happens is for lunatics and fanatics and apocalypse and people who are seeking or concerned about the end of the world. Interestingly enough, this is the place where Jules Verne spoke about in Journey to the Center of the Earth, and Spielberg spoke about in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So a very beautiful place.
While I scan the media, especially Australian television, which is actually not much Australian, there's a lot of Canadian, a lot of British television in there, noticed and hidden to most obscure vandal roaming through the British landscape.
We just need to find it. Helen's wading through drawings and plans relating to our site.
His name is Tony Robinson, and under the pretense of archaeological research, he rips up lawns and meadows with excavators, comes along with radar, with bogus maps from museums, claiming under your front lawn should be the remains of a Roman toilet. And wouldn't it be a great leap in historical and archaeological research to dig it all up up and make a film about it.
Go deeper into the ground, deeper into the radar.
And if we run a trench down there, so we'll get a whole lot of things from the 13th century onwards, all in one trench.
And night after night, I see episodes of this menace destroying other people's places in Britain.
The dig's really beginning to get underway now. It is more than we could have hoped for, because finds from Edward the Confessor's Great Abbey are like gold dust. So we're 99.9% sure that this burial is Anglo-Saxon for greatness.
Anyone who read a little bit about Britain's history knows wherever you dig, you will find all sorts of stuff from pre-Celts, Vikings, Normans and the Romans, of course.
But just before the end of the day, Dave finds some definitive evidence of Edward the Confessor's earlier abbey.
So, Tony Robinson, roaming the innocent meadows of Britain seems a perverted form of paid vandalism. It is a distraction from the fact that you being in Britain literally stand on the loot of other people's belongings anyway.
Then we're sailing into completely uncharted archaeological waters.
Alright, you may have heard about the coal seam gas mania spreading through the country, especially here where we live, and the local Aboriginals in conjunction with Johnny Chai and the Art Camp have taken issue with this. I proudly present, Who is Fracking Around Here?
Watson calling Holmes, Watson calling Holmes, can you read me? Over.
Quick, you fellas, put another gurumen on the webra. It's Watson calling.
Art Camp International presents another intriguing episode featuring our stone super sleuths, Too Many Bong Holmes and Too Late to Keep Your Juddergans Up, Watson. This week's episode is the case of Who's Fracking Around?
Turn the light on, Watson. Turn the light on there, cuz.
Oh, half Holmes, it doesn't work.
Hey, better check the fuse. We only got the one.
By Jove, Holmes, the fuse is gone.
Quick! Call the 10 minutes late security company.
The number called is busy.
Hello, 10 minutes security company. Can I help you? Please hold. You're a valuable customer. Your customer number is 7,254. You've just moved up one place. Our customer service representative will be with you in 3 days, 4 hours and 10 minutes.
Click.
Service isn't what it used to be, Holmes.
Put the kettle on, Watson.
Lapsang Souchong, Holmes?
Oh, spiffy, Watson. Watson goes across to fill the kettle. Light a candle. It's dark in here, Watson. Watson lights a candle and puts on the sink to shed light on to make the tea. A massive explosion.
My moustache is on fire, Holmes.
Instinctively, Holmes picks up the extinguisher and whacks Watson, forgetting that he used it 6 months ago to put out the neighbour's cat.
Bloody dangerous water, Holmes. It caught fire.
Oh, sorry about that, old chap. Forgot about the bujigan in the frying can case. Correct me if I'm wrong. I do deduce from my deductioning there seems to be some freaky, fishy, fracking business going on around here. Call the lock the back door people. You'll find them under R section, under ring stingers.
Excuse me, Holmes, it's lock the gate people.
Oh, hang on, Watson. Give me a weapon. We'll have the Lapsang Sushi.
End of part one. We find our super sleuths. Part two. Sorry about that. We find our super sleuths deep in the bush.
Hey, booger, Watson!
It wasn't me, Holmes.
Hey, someone forgot to have a gunning this morning. Shh, 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 Watson. Put the kettle on. We'll have a spliff.
Scotch finger or Lamington, Holmes?
Oh, very good, old chap.
Holmes and Watson settle down to have morning tea.
Psst, shh. Hey,
What's that hissing sound?
It's a massive snake.
It's not, you fool.
Holmes lights up the joint. Shh.
Come on.
A massive explosion engulfs the surrounding bush in a huge fireball. Stay tuned for next week's installment of Who's Fracking Around?
We'd like to inform the listeners that the cat is alive and well, but now walks with a limp.
This show was brought to you by ArtCamp International, proudly presented by Siegfried, our arms dealer in prosthetic limbs.
Kaput Radio, your companion to the idiot era.
Tony Abbott, thanks for your time.
It's good to be with you, Brian. Good evening. Do you want a few shots of me walking?
No, we've got plenty of those things.
I normally do some. I'm quite good at walking.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
Why is that?
It's a gift.
Terrific.
Always had it.
Good. Tony Abbott, you're opposed to a carbon tax?
Yeah, I was trying to keep that quiet, and we haven't announced that yet, but yes, I am.
How is the world going to deal with carbon emissions if there's not a financial disincentive to producing them?
Brian, I'm not opposed to the reduction of carbon dioxide emissions.
But how is it going to happen if there's not a market-based mechanism for doing so?
Well, I repeat, Brian, I'm not opposed to the reducing of the carbon molecules.
Emissions. Look, if you're not opposed to reducing carbon emissions, why are you opposed to a carbon tax? It doesn't make sense.
Well, I'm opposed to it as a tax.
Are you opposed to other taxes?
I'm opposed to other taxes brought in by this government, Brian. This is a very, very high-taxing government.
Compared to the previous high-taxing government?
No, but compared with a low-taxing government, this is a very, very high-taxing government.
But Mr. Abbott, if you want to build roads, you have to have taxes.
You do.
And provide money for railway lines,
etc. That's
right. Exactly.
That's right.
So, and people understand that, and if they want roads and train lines, they are happy to pay for it.
That's right, but that way they get a road or a train line, Brian. They're buying infrastructure.
So your objection actually isn't to taxes.
Brian, my objection is to a tax brought in by not only a very high taxing government, there's another issue. This is a party that went to the last election.
Oh, we've heard that
and
one.
And said to the public, I'd said that they did say this, Brian. They said, we will not bring in a carbon tax.
Sure.
And Julia Gillard now ought to be man enough to get up and tell
She'll
the public.
What?
She ought to be man enough, Brian. She ought to have the courage to get up and say to the public, look, I've changed my mind. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm hopelessly out of my depth. I'm now in bed with the Greens, and I'm going to bring in a great big huge new tax.
How do you think she'd go saying that?
In an election?
Yeah.
I think we'd beat her.
So do you think she'll do it?
Brian, my problem is that what she's got is one product in the shop window, but she's selling something else out the back.
So your objection to a carbon tax is not on the basis that it won't reduce carbon emissions. Is that right?
What are they?
Well, carbon emissions are the problem.
Oh, well, I'm opposed to them then.
You're against carbon emissions?
Oh, yeah, we won't be having any of them, Brian. But my main problem is with the carbon tax put in by this government.
Yes, because you don't want to bring in a carbon tax.
That's right.
Right. OK. Mr. Abbott, if there was an election and you won, what would you do about carbon emissions?
I'd go to them and I'd say, look, you know, I'm Tony Abbott, I'm in charge now, bloody stop it.
You go to the carbon emissions and tell them this?
I'd be frank with them, Brian. It's the only way to deal with them. I'd say, stop it.
Stop it.
Stop it.
Now.
Right now.
Thanks for your time.
I'd say that to them too. Actually, Brian, you can come. You're good.
You keep the beat. Here we go. Tony Abbott. I want your hard body next to mine, but I can't have it. And it's driving me crazy. And I never felt this way about anyone in a position of power. Not a Catholic liberal leader anyway. So put your bright red Speedos on. You've got my vote. Go sink some votes. You put your bright red Speedos on. Dance like the man on the Mardi Gras float.
You might also have noticed over the last few days that I've been taking time out of the parliament. I've been linked to four deaths.
To their homes, to their families, to schools.
Calm, considered, prepared.
I'm utterly committed to the service of our people.
Mr. Abbott, we're not all leaders of major political parties.
People will make their own judgments about me.
I will well and truly serve the Commonwealth of Australia.
Times when you're, what you say can be believed or trusted, and times when we should accept that it's not necessarily the truth. Are there two Tony Abbotts?
This is just the beginning.
The priesthood was rejoicing when they saw the back of him. He'd worn out every dumbbell in the seminary gym. He's anti-work protections, refugees and women's rights. And he stormed the gates of Canberra with glory in his sight.
Tony Abbott, quick as a whistle.
He'll take away your overtime and dump unfair dismissal.
Well, I'm the Tony Abbott, the tycoon's friend. And one day I could be your PM. Well, yeah, I don't believe in climate change. I do believe in Noah. Global warming's crap, but resurrection is a goer. So let the glaciers disappear and let the oceans rise. I've got my suntan lotion on my masculated thighs.
Just a little lower there, Bronny, hey?
I'm Tony Abbott, a climate change denier.
A friend of big polluters
and a budgie smuggler buyer.
I'm
Tony Abbott, the magnate's friend. And one day I could be your PM.
Will I? No.
When I can cut back education with a passion that's obsessional. Blue with Bernie Banton on the way to the confessional. Fight against the health reforms and rail against abortion. I'll take Australia forward to the days of Johnny Gordon. Yeah!
I'm
Tony Abbott, a real straight shooter.
Cancelling the NBN to f*** with your computer.
I'm
Tony Abbott, your Luddite friend. And one day I could be your PM. Yeah, I am
Tony Abbott, whatever he's conveying.
You can't trust my words unless I'm scripted what I'm saying.
Well, I'm not.
Tony Abbott, your phony friend. Ray, don't become PM.
Ray, I don't become PM.
Ray, don't become PM.
Tell your people,
Ray, don't become PM.
Ray, I don't become your PM.
Well, folks, this was episode 203, devoted to science docusobes, superstition and a deranged opposition leader of this country. Left out this time were over 100 antimatter atoms created at CERN recently. I hope you enjoyed this as contribution to smile during hard times. Contributors were media samples, YouTube samples found with the keywords Tony Abbott comedy. We also heard John Clark and Brian Dawe satirizing the Australian issues, Mitch Bent about quantum mechanics, more end of the world plus aliens inside a mountain saving us stuff, Thule and Chai with their take on cold seam gas mining and fracking, Paul McDermott singing his Tony Abbott song, and more work dedicated to Tony Abbott, Australia's opposition leader. If you wish to contact me, please visit radio4all.net, search for Kaput X Radio, and then proceed to the contact producer link and send me your email with the available inbox. Appreciate that. Thank you. Did I say everything? Yes, if you like to switch off the mass media and listen to some different material tickling your brains, as some of us do, check out The Podcast, produced by Caleb Bullen. You can find The Podcast at the.libsyn.com. And all the these are, of course, just a the. Yeah, that's it. I'm Martin. Catch me again next time.